This is Book Radio. I'm Mark Strassman. Our guests today are Janine Misden and Joanne DeLuca, who've just written Street Trends. Welcome to Book Radio.
Thank you.
Before we start talking about the content of this book, let's talk a little bit about your two backgrounds, how you formed Sputnik, your group, and what you were doing before that.
Both of our backgrounds, I was actually a client of Joanne's. Joanne had an boutique advertising agency for about 12 years. It dealt mainly with youth clients, youth-oriented advertising and stuff like that. And it came to a point where she, in her search and trying to find out the next newest information to get concepts and ideas from, was getting, like, nothing new.
Right.
And my job was constantly being in the field, so I was always doing the grassroots, you know, talking with the people directly and not worrying about surveys and whole nine yards. And then we came together and said there has to be a better way to get the information, more progressive information.
And so is that when you formed Sputnik?
Yeah, 4 years ago.
4 years ago. And what was the concept? What was its niche? What were you trying to do? What was its mission statement, sir?
The mission statement was to get a bunch of, a collective together that really wanted to work together, first of all.
Right.
After growing out of the advertising business, that was the first and foremost concept.
So get like minds together. Right.
To hire and work with people who really understood how to get into the underground correctly, respectfully, to do it, and bring information that really could help companies. Like Janine said, when I was in the advertising business, I used to get like one report after another that was, you know, total, you know, useless crap.
Right.
So basically, that's what we wanted to do, is bring, you know, reality to the whole business of the advertising and marketing world.
Who are your clients? Who's, if the ones that you, whose names you can reveal here in public, or what kind of company uses Sputnik for what, and what exactly do you do for them, and how?
Okay. Clients I can mention, just because for some reason everybody gets paranoid out there.
Right.
I think it's, you know, typical of corporate America these days.
Sure.
But Reebok, Pepsi, NFL Properties, Shiseido, Nine & Company. We deal right now with quite a few beverage companies. I'm not allowed to name names.
Right.
Major cosmetic companies, fashion companies, and currently working on
Some entertainment companies.
And one very big consumer products group that you think would be the last people to want to sit down and talk to youth cultures. That's going to be an exciting time. And basically what we do is we're almost like brand strategists with them. We form a strategic alliance that through our trend report, we then can sit down and help them understand, all right, how is this relevant to your world, in other words?
Okay.
How can you either take some of this information and turn it into either a marketing concept, tweak product? We never say that this information you can take and you're going to make billions of dollars, because if that's what you come into us for, it's not about profiting off of a product.
If you're looking for an outside group to tell you how to do that, then you have to shut the door. I mean, basically, this is just
right.
a tool. Our information is a tool in how to tap into the mindset and what to do with your product and your marketing statement.
What are the companies who come to you in the right way want from you?
They want to have their, like, what they're coming is they want to have that experience that they aren't getting through traditional research.
Like focus groups and all.
Focus groups, surveys. We don't do surveys. We don't ask, like, what's the last CD did you buy? We don't ask them. What we ask is, what's the burning issues that keep you up at night? What they want to do is have that intimate look into these progressive youth cultures, these young people that they can never, you know, get to, because they would never do focus groups.
Their own children who they can't talk to, in a sense.
Well, basically, a lot of the times, yeah, it'll grow out of some of their own children, and not every marketer that we speak to is so out to lunch. I mean, a lot of people, the best relationships we have are when we're working with companies who are on the page, because it's not about, like, going to the clueless and giving them information.
Right.
The best time you can have a working relationship is if you go to someone who has a lot of information, and this is even more information, and then it's a really great working relationship.
And people who even understand what you're doing and how you're doing it,
yeah.
They want some details that they don't have access to.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And yeah, if they're smart and they're visionary and they're creative, there's no fear of it.
Okay, now the central concept, it seems, in what you're talking about is mindset. So
right.
Tell the which is a term of art that means what?
It's your frame of mind, what you're thinking, and it's a shared, usually it's an individual frame of mind, and then what we're tracking is a shared frame of mind.
And it's
ageless. We have a real problem. I know that we say we concentrate on 16 to 29 years old.
Right.
But mindset is ageless, and it is a general thinking. Everybody shares and understands whether you think it individually or it's very similar to other thinking. That's a mindset.
Okay. And the five groups we're going to talk about are all sort of subsets of the big mindset, or are they all distinct mindsets? would you say?
Actually, the five groups that we wrote about in the book, we thought it that way to give a lot of people a point of reference so that they can understand and see, okay, I see this happening in my own little neighborhood.
Right.
But right now, there are several mindsets out there that are fusing and sharing more and more. So
but they are distinct enough to categorize them as
they're
separate.
They're distinct enough for companies to grasp that where the youth culture is not this one big amorphous block.
Okay, and that's an important point that you're trying to make.
Exactly.
It's not the youth culture.
Yeah.
The culture is.
And in the past, like marketing and, I mean, actually media has destroyed what youth culture is because of the labels like Gen X.
Right.
So basically what we're trying to say is don't look at them as one group.
Well, let's look at them as five groups.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe each of you could take two or three of them and sort of give us a brief synopsis of what they're called and what they're about. Starting with, I guess, the collective intellect.
Okay.
Which you mentioned a little bit
before. My favorite. Okay.
Right.
The collective intellect, and actually the sister group is the Soldiers for Culture.
Right.
And what this group is, they are pretty much college age usually. You'll find them in urban areas that foster a lot of creative freedom. They are what we call the independent-minded. They are driving the whole independent zine movement right now. They are the ones that...
Tell our older listeners what a
zine is. Zine is a sort of a an independent magazine.
Okay.
It's like in the old days what was known as newsletters.
Right.
Okay, taken to a new level.
Right, okay.
And the other thing that they're pushing is a lot of the live poetry readings going on. So they're, what they're all about is fostering the creativity in them.
Right.
And the intellectual freedom. And they're also the first behind social issues. And the Soldiers for Culture is just to show marketers that there's this whole other sort of diversity collective. Because when you think college town and alternative and independent, this you're thinking like what the vision of the Seattle alternative scene, it's not that. It's a mixture of ethnicities now. And I think that with this group coming together, you're going to see a sharing of a lot of different cultures and pushing different cultures' art's sake forward.
Okay, and who's the Hip-Hop Nation?
The Hip-Hop Nation is an explosive group that actually everyone has been talking about in the last year in the press. But basically, that was a culture that grew about... started growing
late 80s.
And what happened with them is that they sort of like were developing outside the mainstream and actually out here, like a lot of the record companies didn't even recognize it as a culture. They just thought that, oh, this is a style of music, it's a fad, we'll go in, we'll go out, which they didn't realize that it was fostering a whole new way people were going to think, dress, and grow in the future. And basically, Hip Hop Nation is not a black thing, it's not a white thing. It's definitely, it's a cultural thing. It's young people who, you know, align themselves with that.
And what's its defining characteristic?
The music is really the defining characteristic. You're listening to the music, and actually the music is very political, and the music is about change, and the music is about empowerment, about entrepreneurial. It's really a very, it was really actually very rebellious when it first started, which is really a cool thing. But basically, what was really cool is that mainstream thought it was going to go away. That was, you know, which it never did and will never.
The next group that you mentioned is called the Speed Generation. This is not necessarily methamphetamine use.
Right. No, yes, it is. No, no. No, it isn't.
What are they?
They are basically the freestylers, the people who are, that have redefined, for marketers, a lot of the times, like, you know, how people do sports and, like, teams and stuff, that was always something that they looked at. And these are the young kids who are redefining the way young people will, you know, think of teams in the future. They're the skateboarders, the snowboarders, the surfers. For lack of a better term, what the media has called the extreme kids, which, you know, they're not extreme at all, but they're just, that's what we call them, the freestylers.
Okay. And the final group, Club Kids?
The Club Kids actually is, they're the, we like to say, the voyeurs of the night. They're the ones that are going in and out of the club scene. They've probably been born out of the early 80s. They're the ones who brought us Japanimation into our lives, childlike accessories. We hate to use that label, but they are the people that are totally redefining. They're probably the most they're most outrageous, and they like to push the envelope in their style. And I think the best thing to look at them is, again, for the pop music influences that come in and the way that we'll be accessorizing and dressing in the future.
Are there any people out there who don't belong to any of these groups?
Well, basically, yeah, because basically it's not even about the groups. The reason we use the groups is really as an educational tool.
Right.
There are people who can criss and cross and pull and meld from all these different groups. They're still visionary and they're still
In fact, it sounds like what you're saying is that these ideas are more mindsets than they are demographics.
Exactly.
And then when I was going to ask a question about people migrating back and forth between the groups, they don't. They sort of give more or less mind share to one of these mindsets.
Exactly.
Is that how you'd say so?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
it really is. Like we said, originally we used these groups to paint the picture for a lot of people who weren't out there seeing the changing face of America.
Okay.
And that's really what we used the groups for.
Now, what's the relationship then between these mindsets and the mainstream mindsets?
Well, basically, what the young people we track from Mind Trends, which the book grew out of our reports in the last 4 years,
right,
are the people who are doing things and changing the way the creative process works. So when you have young people who are changing the creative process, that's when you know there'll be an evolution of a concept, and that's when you know it will get to mainstream. It's not like we're not tapping. There are a lot of things that we tap into that we say, okay, this isn't going to be the big picture. This
right.
is the big picture because this is how it's going to evolve and get to mainstream.
Well, how does it evolve and get to mainstream? What's the mechanism?
Oh, through the music, through the internet, through writing, through...
And style is usually the
style.
Last. You know,
yeah,
the
style.
Fashion is the last visible sign of how it gets there.
Okay, we've got some specific, sort of not exactly mindsets, but themes that you list and discuss as things to watch for. The first one is maybe you can pronounce it exactly properly, artificial what?
Pleasures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us what those are.
Artificial pleasures is really the redefinition of the senses and how young people will think, react to products, react to environments in the future. And it really is, it's like virtual reality meets, science fiction finally meets reality.
You cite Alice in Wonderland as a sort of an archetypal
milieu. It's a total surrealist, right.
There's a lot of drug taking in Alice in Wonderland, although it's hidden pretty well as Drink Me and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The young people in this book are not constantly, but often, and without any pejorative denunciations from you, the authors, using marijuana and LSD and psilocybin and whatnot. Is that a normal, accepted, okay part of the emerging mindsets to use what are, I guess you'd have to say, illegal drugs?
I don't know. No. First of all, I don't even know that that's part of the picture. You know, that
okay.
is not, I totally disagree that they are doing that, and if they are in their own life, that's their private
life.
It's
in the book a lot. There's a lot
yeah.
of people taking a lot of
drugs. No, we explain the drugs that are influencing in some of the scenes.
Right.
It doesn't mean that everyone that we interview or that this whole mindset of this culture goes into it.
Right.
You know what I mean? To not sit down and discuss drugs that are prevalent in subculture, because
right.
drugs, since you can go way back to tribal days, so
right.
it's been in every generation,
right.
you know? And that's what we just showed, because people thought cocaine was the drug of the 80s, well, the 90s is several other. But the people we interview, it doesn't mean that they are onto that, you know? And
well, the essence of this process that you're describing seems to be that creativity and new ideas emerge within these subcultures and then percolate out to the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And one, if not the prime justification that people have in recent years used for drug taking is that it enhances their creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering whether or not the entire system is dependent on, but at least relates to, the use of illegal drugs as a means of stimulating creativity and therefore all the ideas in the book.
What's interesting to me, though, is that even in the book we're talking about the techno-shaman movement,
right.
where going back to even the whole natural type of mind enhancers. And to me, I think that that's a very interesting thing that the underground's really into. What kind of enhancements can you get out of the natural stimulants also? And that's really where we're looking at. Actually, our next mind trend, we're sending someone to India to really tap into that whole new scene coming down the pike.
The bionic being is another subject that you deal with.
Mm-hmm.
What are those?
Well, when we were getting our tapes in, which was the most interesting thing, was that how young people, were really obsessed on staying young.
Right.
And it started much younger than in the past. People are talking about, trying to extend their lives to 150 at the age of, 20, which
right.
was really not a norm to start thinking that way until you start facing the second
right.
part of your life. So the bionic being really opens the door to a lot of, products and markets to realize that these are the young people who have grown up on the culture of staying young, staying fit, pumping up.
So in other words, they're already buying into what their elders have bought into, but
exactly.
They're buying into it even earlier.
And yeah, and they're not opposed to
they're
not opposed to putting things like they'll be the first to line up for the inserts into the skin to infuse like your
whatever it is. Okay, freestyling.
Freestyling actually is a mindset that's been in youth culture for a long time. What we tried to show is the way that they're going to approach life with no preconceived notions or rules, okay? And I think the interesting thing is in corporate America and in 50 years old, we spent a lot of money to create a brainstorming, quote-unquote, or we have these chat sessions, quote-unquote. They do that naturally.
Right.
And I think that the biggest thing to learn out of freestyling is this approach is a highly creative, fly by the seat of my pants, no fear approach to whatever they do. And when that merges in with traditional business, it's going to be an exciting time, it may be a frustrating time, but I think that you're going to see a lot more of that thinking entrepreneurial in a big, complex world.
Okay, we're going to come back to that probably in just a minute or two. I want to get to the last of the major concepts that you're dealing with, positive anarchy. What's that?
Positive anarchy is something that has been growing out of, a lot of it actually came out of the hip-hop, beginning of the hip-hop resurgence, and where it is, it's like change that necessarily sometimes from the outside doesn't seem so positive, yet it is positive, and it's really like, a lot of people say like this generation is very chaotic because they're viewing it as anarchy, but it really isn't. It's really like a real positive spin on the change that they're trying to make happen.
Good. Back to freestyling. In the notes I got here from your publicist, it says one of the outcomes for marketers of one of the hints for marketers from the idea of freestyling is that slogans that mock traditional hype make sense. For example, Sprite's image is nothing, thirst is everything. How does that grow out of the freestyle mindset?
Well, basically, it's taking the product attribute that people are so used to being shoved down their throat, and actually it's like a company coming up for once and being really honest and real about it and being able to laugh at themselves. The whole freestyle mentality also ties into the whole, like, underdog, ties into the whole, like, what's cool is not cool mentality, and that's really all part of it.
And it grew out of actually the freestyle sports scene, because everything in the alternative sports when it started was cool to suck. Like the underdog was great. Big brands were not allowed in. They only wore and used from surf to skate to BMX. They only use brands that were created, marketed by those who have used or within their culture. You know, we all know what Nike, Adidas, Converse, they all tried to jump into that culture and they haven't really succeeded. So that whole thing grew out of the freestyle thinking that one with me and my posse and you're my kind, and we don't care for number one. Number two is just as good, you know.
What I want to try to focus on now for maybe the rest of the interview is this idea of how you can simultaneously purport to be anti-commercial and be commercial. Image is nothing, thirst is everything is the slogan. But in fact, they're generating the image there that they don't care about image, it seems to me. And if they hire you with your background, skills, and abilities, and they hire other experts, and they spend millions of dollars to convince young people that they're cool, that they're beyond cool, that they're with them, that they sympathize with them, that they're in touch with their innermost cravings and dreams, when in fact they're trying to make a buck. How does that work exactly?
Well, see, if you're going to use Sprite as an example, I'll use Sprite because it's one of the fastest growing soft drinks.
Right, and soft drinks are in fact nothing.
Right. So basically, what Sprite did was something, and the reason it was successful because young people see through the hype was that what Sprite did was they tapped into a community that was ignored for very long, and when they did image is they tapped into that hip hop community, and what they did did beautifully is that they didn't hype it. They used the right music. They used it. And usually when big companies do that, they gave props. You know what that means? Like they actually acknowledged these underground artists, and they didn't have to say, oh, by the way, this is who's on the soundtrack. The people in the know knew, and actually that's why the community really respected it, and that's why Sprite was, the choice of, this whole new, generation coming up the pike. So it really was, a real, when the biggest thing you ask kids is they say, keep it real. And what keeping it real was what these Sprite commercials did.
Let me try to approach it from another point of view.
Okay.
It isn't real. What it is that the major multinational corporations, international capital in a word,
mm-hmm.
needs to sell shirts, soda pop,
yeah.
and beyond that, it needs to sell a lifestyle in which consuming shirts, soft drinks, mm-hmm. makeup, and whatnot makes you a full, complete, realized, actualized, and happy human being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I saw as a glaring contradiction in this entire picture was that if I take you at your word that these young fringe mindset trend-setting people believe in higher consciousness, higher community, deeper, truer, realer existence, and at the same time that the purpose of all of this work is to figure out how to sell them stuff, and they're willing to buy it, even though what they seem to be saying is that we're not into this.
Yeah, but see, I think you're getting...
I see a certain
yeah.
paradox contradiction here.
No, but see, but that's being almost like naive in a way. I mean, young progressive people have to wash their clothes, they have to drink soda, they have to buy purchases. So basically, when someone markets, and when a company has a youth brand, and they're
yeah.
trying to market to youth in general.
Right.
Like, why wouldn't they want to have the best resources to do it as real as possible?
Are you saying that it's inevitable that they're going to shop? We're just
exactly.
talking about various market shares?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a different way of selling, right?
Right.
We grew up from a different generation.
Right.
No more is it good enough to say, we're Procter & Gamble and we're the best out there and you have to buy the soap.
Now you have to say, we're Procter & Gamble, we're not so good.
No, it's not that. You're literally taking, I can argue to say you're literally taking one small segment of this thing and blowing it up to be the big message on how to market to these people.
Okay.
I think the picture that you're missing is that this is a different mindset coming down. Exactly. They're alternative. They're conscious. They still want to consume products. Hey, this is a generation that grew up with Nike, Pepsi, the whole nine yards. So they don't fight big brands. They want big brands to keep it real. It's not enough to stick your name in the neighborhood.
Keep it real.
In other words, respect my community, give something back to me and my community.
You mean?
And or don't pretend to be something you're not.
Make contributions to our higher consciousness.
Yeah, look, I could use. There was this car. I think it was Toyota, and
right.
they threw this kid from Seattle. They said, like, it was this, like, you run Seattle kid. They threw him on top of this truck,
right.
and they said, why this truck is like punk rock. Now, first of all, the kid's not punk rock. He's from Seattle Grunge.
Right.
So it's like the idea that they even would mix the metaphors and understand, it's a total, like, you don't understand that these young people have a musical history. You don't respect their musical history. And so basically, when companies try to attach that way,
right.
that's where it falls apart. However, if the company understood the culture, they understood the history, and they understood the music, they
right.
wouldn't throw a grunge kid and say, why this truck is like punk.
Old people have been making
exactly.
those mistakes for advertising since there's been
yeah,
advertising.
But old people, if you want to talk to young people, and new culture brands want to talk to young people,
right.
they have to stay in
tune
with
their own, they have to speak their language.
Exactly.
There's no doubt about that. In
right.
order to communicate to anyone, to
right.
get them to do anything, you need to speak their language.
Right.
What I'm saying is, what came to me out of your description
mm-hmm.
of these, what you call progressive youth communities,
mm-hmm.
is that they are anti-materialist, that they are believing in expanding their consciousness through drugs, computers, body piercing, dress, or whatever, and that's how they reach their, if you'll pardon the expression, nirvana. And
none of
them are into the suburban consumptive mode, are they?
Because they're not mainstream. Because they are not mainstream. What you're talking about is conscious, intellectual, whatever. We do not speak to mainstream. So you have to understand that people like Pepsi wants to market to a mainstream.
Are you saying you're not
going
to sell to these people? These people may be anti-materialist, but you're not trying to sell to them?
I'm not trying to sell. What we're doing is to say, look and understand what they are driving.
Right.
Because what they are driving in one shape or form, not in its purest form, but one shape or form will somehow affect mainstream. Okay? For instance, it will. It totally will. And that's what we're saying. It's that, yeah, you may not be able to sell that kid who's got his own website, he's on the internet, he's totally vegan, and he doesn't wear one big brand label on his everywhere else
exactly.
who will have access to your brand.
And so you need to sort of pitch your there was one girl in the book who was pointing to her Nikes and pointing out her name, Leah.
It was Adidas,
Adidas.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't get that
brand.
saying how vegan they are, mm-hmm. without noticing that the dinosaurs who died to create the oil, to create the synthetic materials that built her Adidas, were live animals who she would probably want to, you know, like love and pet.
She doesn't go back that far, exactly.
So when Nike said, none of us go back that far. If you're saying Adidas then says 100% vegan, or if it turns out that the purity, you talk about this purity.
Well, I would never tell Adidas or anybody to say 100% vegan on their posh. You want to know why every Joe walking down the street will not know what that means, okay?
Right.
What you will do, I'll give you a perfect example of that for you, and I'll use the athletic industry. Right now, the athletic industry in their shoes is all bells, whistles, high tech, how much air, that means nothing can I get in my shoes.
Right.
Everybody's saying, I am sick of this synthetic stuff. I am sick of this color stuff.
Right.
So they need to shift and go to more organic uppers, whether it be canvases again. But they're not going to put on the shelf and say, I'm 100% vegan, because they're not, first of all.
Right.
And I am not 100% organic, because they will never be. I totally agree with you. What they take from this learning is, how can I shift my product, because the market is going to move, and the market will move. We can't be so much one way all the time. We shift, we move, we evolve. That's human nature, that's society. And that's what they take away from this. They're not going to put their sign out and say, I'm going to get that vegan person.
And, you know, like, anybody that's successful, like, I'll go back to Sprite, like, anyone who's successful, you know that they have a team who really likes their consumer. And if what Julian and I bring in with the taste and with Underground, that's why, like, we have people calling us to want to be part of Sputnik, because what we bring, they like the product, they like the way it's represented, because it's real. And if we could bring anything to corporate America, it's like this consumer. Because a lot of people fear the consumer, this young person, because they're not in touch with them enough. So basically, and out of these tapes, you get to grow and you get to know people where you couldn't in the past.
All right. Well, the first step our readers, potential readers of your book can take to start understanding these non-fearful individual young people and in their groups.
I always like to say is, don't look at this from your set of values.
Right.
Okay? Do not look at this from your set of values. Understand from their set of values.
Right.
Because so many people will say, well, if they pierce their nose or they freestyle and everything and everybody else is doing it, how are they the individual? You know what I mean? Then they're just conforming like we did in all the past years. Well, maybe that's your judgment on them conforming, but you stop and talk to them and they're still an individual. So I try to tell people, you have to let go of your understanding and your set of values. And when you can let go and really listen to what they're saying and sort of get in their mode, then you're going to be able to grow with them.
Okay. Well, anthropologists have known that for a long time. And
exactly.
If you read this book, Street Trends, we'll know it too, and they'll get some valuable information about what young people are thinking today. Thank you very much.